Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
For the past 3 seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a 4th season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Zach and Josh, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
Snap to Cole on 2nd and 10 in the pocket, throws across the middle, intercepted. Dolak has done it again, returning at the 45, hurling at the 50, at the 40, crossing the field from left to right at the 35, at the 30, 20, 15, 10, 5, bullseye! Oh my God, the most amazing play you will ever see from a guy who has 5 of them every game, Sean Dolak. Unbelievable!
Paul Peck there on the call from UB's 37-20 win last night. We've been mentioning it throughout the show today. Bulls do win. They go to 7-4. They got one more game now next Tuesday against winless Kent State. Knock on wood. They should be 8-4 going into a bowl game. They're facing a winless Kent State team. But Sean Dolak, unbelievable story. He's kind of been becoming a bit of a no-name, especially since the Northern Illinois game where they got their second ranked win ever in program history. But now, I mean, he leads the FBS in tackles. Josh, after last night, he is now 2nd in the FBS in interceptions with 5. He is tied with a group of guys, but he is tied for 2nd with 5.
Wow.
The leader is from Cal. He has 7. He's likely not going to get there, but he's a semifinalist for the Buckus Award. The finalist will be named on November 25th. He is a finalist for the Burlsworth Trophy finalist. That award is for the best player that began their career as a walk-on. The Buckus Award is for the best linebacker in college football.
You know, it
unbelievable.
Great for him. Fantastic for him. He's going to go in like the 2nd, 3rd round, isn't he?
there was hopes for me thinking like, oh, you know, maybe he'll like fall to like the 4th or 5th, and like the Bills can just kind of swoop him up. And that would partially just be for like the fun story of like,
yeah,
you know,
right,
you got
right.
Andreessen, now you've got Dolak, and Dolak's awesome.
It'd be super
not
cool.
A shot. I mean, not a shot.
I mean, to be fair though, if he's this good and you want to spend a higher draft pick on him, hey.
I just don't know if it's necessarily like a huge need. I just don't know.
I guess it depends. Like, it depends on who's available in the other spots before that.
Yeah. By the way, like, total tackles as well. He's number 1. UB's Red Murdoch, a junior linebacker, is number 2 at 135. Dolak at 146.
What?
So they will also have another awesome linebacker next year.
That's fantastic. This is the thing I've loved about UB football over the past couple of years, is it's just like linebacker U. Like,
yeah.
It's just... Where do you get your linebackers? UB.
UB.
Oh, really?
Did
yeah.
You draft yep. him? No, but he's an NFL player.
Yeah.
We just kind of grabbed him. They've been a lot of fun to watch this year. A bit of a boom or bust program, to be fair, at least this year. They've had games where they just blow teams out. They've had other games where it's like, oh no, guys. All right, just wrap it up. But
yeah.
Pete Lembo, he is doing something really, really good there.
If he doesn't win MAC Coach of the Year, I will be shocked.
I think it's got to be a runaway. I want to get the tweaks. I want to get the year and the coach's name right. But he is doing something. Yes, here it is. First year UB head coach with 7 wins. That is the first time that has been done since 1897. C.W. Dibley. I'm not convinced that's a real person.
What?
I'm not convinced that's a real person. That's not a real person. And also 1897? Come on. Who was keeping stats back then?
You know when
it was the Wild West.
Do you know when UB started their football program?
1897.
1894. This is the second head coach, likely the second head coach in UB football history, is the guy that held that record.
Yeah, Pete Lembo coming in first year, doing great. They got a win over Toledo this year as well, and Toledo, Ohio. They also played last night. They've been sort of the darlings of the MAC, at least in the regular season. They're 1-2 in terms of wins since, I think, 2016. But to go from 3-9 last year to and staring the face down at least in the regular season, 8-4. You're definitely going to go to a bowl game at that point. 6-6, it leaves up for interpretation because you're just bowl eligible. It doesn't mean you immediately get into one. 7-4, even better. And then now potentially 8-4 again. Winless Kent State team next week. And I want to say that is going to be Tuesday night. Yep, that is next Tuesday, the 26th, 7 p.m. at UB Stadium. Should be fun. I actually went to their only loss at home this year.
Oh, so it's your fault.
Yeah, it's 100% my fault.
Nice.
What are their odds to win the MAC East?
I think
get to the MAC Championship, I should say.
I think very low, because you got Ohio at 6-1 in the conference, Miami, Ohio at 6-1, Bowling Green at 5-1, and then Buffalo's at 5-2.
So I was
and the team they beat of that group, they've lost to Ohio. They beat Toledo. Toledo, though, losing last night, goes to 4-3 in the conference.
I'm diving down the rabbit hole a little bit here on this whole. You know, when UB football started, right?
Mm-hmm.
Their first season, they played 2 games. They lost both of them.
Nice.
They did not score a single point.
Nice.
You know who they played? 2 high school teams. This is no disrespect to UB football program, but like, that's crazy.
So good.
It's crazy. Like, again, this is the beginning stages of football too, so it's not like it was anything like
barely
we know.
A sport.
Like it's not like anything we know today. I mean, I'm looking at the team picture. There are 17 guys on the team.
Barely a sport. Yep.
There's 17.
They're
players.
Wearing sweaters.
Yeah, and they're all wearing different sweaters. By the way, none of them are matching.
So good.
But it is cool just to like look.
1897.
Look, just like to look back down this rabbit hole of like history here. It's just fun.
Can I just say how Northern Illinois was a ranked team and they are 3-4 in the MAC?
That loss should be held against Notre Dame harder.
It really should.
Great win for UB. Notre Dame, what are we doing here?
Yeah.
We were at home. It wasn't like you had to go on the road to a MAC environment.
UB beat Northern Illinois, so I mean, UB beat Notre Dame.
As I did say, though, I went to a UB game this year. First time in a long time. I used to hold season tickets. Me, my dad, his buddy, my brother also was a part of it. Like, we went for 5 or 6 years. Drew Willie was one of my favorite quarterbacks growing up. I was a big Joe Licata fan as well. And I didn't go for 10-plus years. Went to homecoming this year, and it was such a cool environment. It was a lot of fun, great crowd. They ultimately didn't win the game. Little garbage from the refs. I'm just saying. But I really like what they're building there. Lembo mm-hmm. gives me a vibe of a guy that is not necessarily going to take the next big job. He seems like a MAC coach. He's taken coordinator and positional jobs elsewhere. I mean, he was just at South Carolina, but he feels like a MAC coach.
Yeah.
And
I remember talking to him too.
I love what UB has. Yeah.
He was such a great character to talk to too, in terms of like who he is and probably in like the locker room and
which
everything.
Which threw me. I was not prepared for that.
Yeah. And if that's the culture he's creating here, I can see nothing but great things for UB going forward.
I think he outright called him a sleeping giant in the MAC.
Yeah.
I think he did. I can't remember exactly, mm-hmm. but I've always kind of felt that way. There were years with Lembo or with Lance Leipold and then their basketball programs as well.
Yep.
Felicia Leggett, Jack and Nate Oates that I was like, oh man, move up to a bigger conference. We've gotten better. Come on. And never materialized, but they have, I think, the ability, the foundation, everything to really have a run here. And for, again, in year one, to go from 3-6 or whatever they were last year to 7-4 like that. Again, one more game at home against a winless Kent State team who also were completely blown out by Akron for the wagon wheel, by the way, for Ross Tucker was calling that game the other day. It's big. It's a lot of fun. I really, really enjoy when UB is good because, again, that was my childhood for college football. Yes, I've been mm-hmm. a Texas fan for most of my life. But in terms of local college football, I went to a lot of UB games. And I had like a lot of nostalgia going back. Finally, actually sat on the other side of the stadium too, because my season tickets were on the other one. So like right. going to the other side, I was like, I'd basically never been here. This is awesome. And it was just, it was really, really cool.
Brand new scenery.
Yep.
Hey, we just got an interesting tweet from Will. I was going to say, because
you were talking about anniversaries. We've got another one.
Yeah. So 14 years ago, again, this tweet comes in from Will. Thanks, Will. A box score and highlights from a Bills-Bengals game. He said it came up in a Facebook memory. The Bills win 49-31 to go 2-8. The Bengals also 2-8 at the time.
So good.
They fall to 2-8, I'm assuming. This is a crazy box score. So I'm in the screenshot, I'm only able to see up to halfway or most of the way through the second quarter. But by the end of the first half, the Bills were losing 28-13 and ended up winning.
Mm-hmm. Oh, is this the
49-31?
Why so serious?
The why so serious game?
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I didn't realize that was that game. Yeah.
Stevie Johnson. All right. One of my favorite Bills of all time.
And then the next week they end up losing to Pittsburgh in overtime.
Yeah. Drought Bills, baby. Let's go.
Drought Bills. What were I want to look up real quick, what were Stevie's overall stats in that game? Because it wasn't just that. He had, I think, 3 touchdowns.
Mm-hmm.
Let me grab this. Yeah. 11 targets, 8 catches, 137 yards, 3 touchdowns. So good. Josh, oh man, he is my favorite Bill, I think, of all time, Stevie Johnson. Partially because for no reason, and I'd say that jokingly, during Darrell Revis's prime, where every great receiver is like, I can't. Mm-hmm. I'm going to get 2 catches for 10 yards every game.
Right.
Stevie Johnson would go out there and have like 8 catches, 100 yards, and a touchdown. It was on the dot every time. It was for no reason. He was the guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he's the guy that Revis saw the most.
Right, exactly. And divisional opponent and everything.
Oh, man.
I also love looking at this box score because, like I said, up till the end of the first half, it was a pretty high-scoring game, and then the second half was all Bills, literally all Bills. You had 2 touchdowns in the third quarter, 3 in the fourth quarter. Like, the Bills get their first lead of the game in the fourth quarter on their 3rd touchdown of the half.
I mean, when Stevie scores, the score at that point is Cincinnati 31, Bills 14. He makes it 31-21.
Yeah.
And then, Florence has a 27-yard fumble return for a touchdown. Brian Lindell's the kicker. Oh, boy. And then Stevie Johnson, 2 more. And then Fred Jackson also gets a rushing touchdown there.
2 rushing touchdowns.
Yep.
Yeah, he had one earlier in the game. That's the thing is, like, you look at this, and it starts out pretty normal. It's 7-7 at the end of the first quarter. And then all of a sudden, it's 31-14 at the end of the half.
Jackson, 21 rushing attempts, 116 yards, and 2 touchdowns.
Wow. Fitzpatrick, 21 for 34, 316 yards, 4 touchdowns, and 2 interceptions. Carson Palmer.
Oh, what a guy.
This was also the last year of the red helmets, because the next year that's when the Bills transitioned over to their current look.
Oh, man. I'm just going through these stats again, like seeing Terrell Owens is on this team. 9 targets, 3 catches, 63 yards.
Chad Ojosinko's on the Bengals.
Yep.
Like,
oh, yeah, they got him listed here as Chad Johnson.
Yeah.
6 targets, 3 catches, 20 yards, a touchdown. Owens also had a touchdown. Donald Jones is a part of this. 5 targets, 5 catches, 70 yards, and a touchdown.
Who had the fumble?
The Drought Bills. That would be the fumble return for a touchdown?
No, who fumbled it is what I'm saying.
Oh, I do not know. I'm
trying to find it here. It's not listed.
I'm looking. Oh, that would have been Cedric Benson.
Cedric Benson. I see it. I missed it.
Texas great Cedric Benson. There we go.
There's also 2 defensive touchdowns in this game. The fumble recovery touchdown, and then also Joseph Johnson on one of his 2 interceptions has a 27-yard return for a touchdown.
What a weird year. Where did the Bills ultimately go in 2010?
Ooh.
I mean, they're 2-8 in
this game. They're 2-8 in that game, so probably not very good.
It wasn't like they were playing well.
4-12.
You know what? Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, I'm now remembering this year and how I felt. It was not great, Josh. It was not great. Because you want to know who was dominating college football at this time and who really frustrated me that the Bills started winning games? Think about it. Great, arguably one of the greatest college football quarterbacks of all time. Really only played 1 season, too.
I can't get Cam Newton out of my head, but that's too
early. That's correct.
I thought that was too early.
Cam Newton,
but I couldn't
Auburn.
Get Cam Newton out of my head. I
The Bills lost to Chicago.
It's crazy how long ago he got drafted.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like, I didn't realize.
Especially if you ever rewatch his Iron Bowl performance, it looks still like current college football. It doesn't look all
that
different.
Well, that's what
different.
I mean. Yeah. Because I'm thinking of, obviously, the glory years of Cam Newton with Carolina was like 2015, 16, 17. But to me, that's like his like second, third, and fourth year. That's not him being in the league for 3, 4, 5 years at that point.
Do you remember his debut against Arizona? Gets in there. I mean, wins the Heisman Trophy. No. One of the best years in college football. I think only in terms of quarterback position, really only surpassed by Joe Burrow in 2019. Goes in his first game, throws like 400 yards.
That's crazy.
And ultimately, his entire career would not really be known for throwing.
Yeah.
But I think it's like, I think that was his highest passing rating total or passing yard total in his career, as well as his rookie year. Just it's a wild game against Arizona where he throws like 40 yards. I think they lose. He has like 3 rushing touchdowns. Like, you watched that game and went, we're fine. And this is a team that was Jimmy Clausen led in 2010. They were abysmal, Josh, on offense. I mean, awful.
This season was also the year the Bills traded Marshawn Lynch.
Yeah.
Because I'm looking here, and I'm looking at like other games, by the way, at that point. That Bengals win was the Bills' second win in a row because their first win came the week before in week 10.
It's Detroit. 14-12. What a barn burner.
Yeah, great game. But I'm also looking back, and I'm like, oh, highest rusher, Lynch, 2 weeks in a row in weeks 2 and 3. What happened? Where'd he go? And then I'm like, oh, yeah, that's the year he got traded.
That's so good.
Yeah.
And then that's where we actually, oh, I don't know who the player was, but we just had the Beastquake celebration reenacted. Because Marshawn Lynch in 2010, with a 7-9 Seattle Seahawks team, beat New Orleans in the playoffs, have one of the greatest playoff runs of all time, and he dives backwards into the end zone. I can't remember who just did it, but yeah.
I think I might be able to find it real quick right here.
Fun enough, I mean, I remember this season for how frustrated I was. I will tell you, the 2011 season is still my favorite Drought Bill season in terms of just like the memories I have. It's 2011 the next year because they play, funny enough, Kansas City in week one and they blow them out 41-7. And I just remember, I'm 12-ish at that point, 12, 13.
Oh, David Montgomery.
Montgomery, thank you.
Yeah.
But I was like 12, 13-ish at the time.
Wait, no, sorry, that was not.
That is not it?
Well, this one happened. This was posted September 30th.
Oh, then that's not it.
No, that's not it.
He was like this like last week. He was a college player.
Oh, see, I'm looking for. I thought you said.
I think he was a college player.
No, it was Jameson Williams.
Oh.
With the Lions.
Okay. Nope. Now I'm remembering it. Thank you.
There it is. There it is. I found it.
But that 2011 season, I just remember it, again, being 12, 13 years old or whatever. And I remember going on NFL Network like the next morning on Monday, so excited because they were going to show so many Bills highlights.
Yeah, great.
Oh my gosh, they're scoring so much. And I remember maybe it was either week 2 against Oakland or going into week 3 against New England where they were just talking about how like the entire offense was basically like fifth round and later. Like everybody. and it was just, to me, looking back on it, that was not sustainable by any means. And ultimately, Fitzpatrick gets hurt. They lose a ton in a row to go 6-10. Yeah. But at the time, like, after
they
beat the Patriots.
5-2 and ended 1-8.
Yeah. After they beat the Patriots, though, I was sitting there. I'm like, we're going to have a bunch of, like, nobodies that are just going to drag us to the playoffs. We're not that good.
I think Fred Jackson broke his leg and he was out for the season.
Yeah. This season, this is Fred Jackson's best season, is 2011. He was honestly, like, on for, like, offensive player of the year kind of stuff. Josh, let me pull up his stats from that season, the 2011 one. So in 10 games played, he had 934 yards rushing, 6 touchdowns, and then he had 39 receptions, 442 yards, no touchdowns. He was just everywhere. He was doing everything for them, and he's doing this at 30 years old. Oh, man, that was a really cool year. I want to pull up like the game log for that because, oh, man. 2011 Fred Jackson was different, and this is during the period too where they've got CJ Spiller and is he actually the better running back because of yards per carry and such. But I mean, he starts off the year 2 straight 100 yard rushing games, receiving, he's catching passes. Against New England, he has 74 rushing yards, 87 receiving yards. He has 3 straight 100 yard rushing games as well against Philadelphia, the Giants, and Washington. They go 2-1 in that stretch.
He had only one 1,000-yard season in 2009.
Oh,
man.
If he had just missed like one game in that year, you're looking at like a 1,400-yard rushing season and like an 800-yard receiving season.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so frustrating. Because I love Fred Jackson. I think we all do. He's probably one of the most beloved, mm-hmm. you know, drought-era Bills. Him, Eric Wood, Kyle Williams.
Even Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Ryan Fitzpatrick absolutely is on there. For me, Stevie, obviously. Yep. I think for most people, he'd be up there. But yeah, oh, man.
Mount Rushmore, Bills drought era.
Fitz.
Top four.
Fred. Brian Moorman. Kyle Williams. Where am I at four?
That's four.
I'll leave it there.
Wait. Yeah, four.
I'll leave it there. I feel good about that.
All right.
I feel really
I
good
love
about
Brian
that.
Moorman.
I'd personally swap out Brian Moorman.
This city was ready to riot when they cut him. He deserves a spot on the route, Mount Rushmore.
I personally would just...
I was there. I was ready to go.
He could be an honorable mention, sure.
No, he's like, on there.
He's the fifth guy. But
he makes perfect sense for a huge playoff drought, though, that a punter needs to be on there. That is true. I'm not gonna realistically put like a great player or two on there. Like Fitz is there for the vibes. Great guy, has memorable wins, but the stats were always frustrating. They paid him, and you kind of knew it was gonna go bad. You know, even the great players they had kind of hated the city, and there was never really good feelings there. McGahee, Lynch, stuff like that. Where, you know, Fred's coming from Coy College. That's awesome. Moorman's a punter. We always saw him. It was great. Kyle Williams.
He was
kind of there all the way to the end.
Pro bowler Moorman always was. He was the only pro bowler that came from the Bills.
Him and Kyle Williams. Williams, though, was like the underrated like defensive tackle of his generation. That if he was on a better team, more people would know who he is. Mm-hmm. You know, he just wasn't as good as like someone like Joe Thomas on a bad Browns team. But everyone's like, yeah, but he's the best left tackle in football. I can't say anything bad about him.
All right, we only got about like half hour or so left, but I'm putting the tweet out there now. Give me your Bills drought, Mount Bills Rushmore. Drought. Let's go. Check it out
and
on Twitter
and
right
all
now.
Because it's the 14th anniversary to
yeah, just because the Bengals.
The Why So Serious
again?
Game.
Thank you, Will, for tweeting this at us because this has led down a nice rabbit hole here.
One of my favorite highlights, easily my least favorite uniforms though for the Bills, easily my least favorite uniforms, even surpassing blue pant current era, even surpassing those.
What can we bring up the navy blue discussion again? Why you don't like it? Because I like it.
Bad. Well, look here. My big reason why I don't like it, honestly, is because they were really, really bad in them.
That's fair.
It's a big part. If they were good in them, they all of a sudden become better.
Well, it's the same.
I think Patriots fans would tell you the same thing. Like those uniforms they had forever were a complete change to mm-hmm. what they had in the 80s and 90s. Where, I mean, they were wearing red or even the Drew Bledsoe era where it's bright blue. 2000s, they go to darker uniforms, and it stays forever. Why? They were winning.
Yeah.
I mean, the Bills, I'm not saying would have absolutely changed the uniforms already, but if they were like currently still bad, we'd probably be having a discussion of, like, do we just change it back to the red helmets? Do we go back to the 90s? Maybe. I mean, teams do that. I mean, they'll change uniforms just for the sheer fact of the bad vibes. We talk about this with the Sabres all the time.
Right.
Of
the dark blue in the mid-2010s.
Yeah.
It looks like when I was watching that highlight reel earlier from the 10-game win streak, it's weird to see them in that dark blue because, wow, they were really good. But mm-hmm. then you remember how bad everything else was around that.
Brian Colesio, by the way, not tweeting him but texting in, Eric Wood over Fitzpatrick.
Ooh.
I think that's fair.
I can listen to that.
I think that's fair.
Fitz has just – both him and Eric Wood both have that personality.
Mm-hmm.
But just – everything Fitz has done well, but Eric's.
I was
it's
say,
hard because I was gonna say everything Fitz has done for the Bills since then. But Eric works with the Bills,
really
so it's
helped,
hard.
But and I don't say this negatively. I think it is an important aspect that Eric Wood now is part of the Bills broadcast,
right.
It has been for a number of years, mm-hmm. and is good.
Fitz is just
job.
Supporter from afar.
Yeah,
yeah. I think it's okay to put Eric in there.
But, and you know what? And also this too, Eric. Only played for the Buffalo Bills.
Mm-hmm. Fitz was kind of a journeyman.
You can even argue Fitzmagic is more of a thing after the Bills. And that there are moments, sure, but the Fitzmagic kind of moniker
mm-hmm.
sort of comes afterwards.
We've got some early ones here. Mike tweets in, Brian Moorman.
Correct.
Fitz,
it's objectively correct.
Fitz, okay. Fred Jackson, and Aaron Schobel.
The Aaron Schobel. All right. Okay.
We've also got one here from Eric. Kyle Williams, Mario Williams, Fred Jackson, and Fitz. That's fair.
I mean, if we're talking
Mario Williams,
if we're talking talent, I understand the Mario
that's,
thing.
Right. That was just like a big moment. But I don't know if I could put him up there because of the fact of just mm-hmm. other than the signing, it was like, okay, cool. You know?
Yeah. 803-0550, the number to call. Talking a little Bills drought here on the bye week. If you want to jump in with your Mount Rushmore or even just favorite player from that era, would love to hear it. We're on for another half hour here as we get ready for Paul Hamilton and Brayton Wilson to cover Sabres Live today, as both them and One Bills Live off today and tomorrow with the Bills on the bye week. Zach Jones, Josh Schmidt, you're listening to WGR.
It's Patrick, fires, oh, caught! Steve Johnson, touchdown, Buffalo! What a play, and what a move! 28 yards!
Why so serious?
Gus Johnson on the call as well.
Gus Johnson
calls.
And
Steve Tasker. Tasker was on that game too.
Oh, man. The Gus Johnson calls, though, are...
They bring me back.
Some of his early 2000, like, NFL calls. I mean, Stokely down the side. Yep. Iconic. Yep. So good.
Gus Johnson, any call. Iconic.
Here's my only issue. Maserati Marv. We needed to be better there. Yeah. We needed to be better. That didn't need to happen. No. That needed to be better.
It was okay.
It's okay. It's okay. It's not special.
No, that's fair. All right.
Marvin Harrison Jr. in college kind of deserved to be special.
Yeah.
that man, he is at Ohio State, he was truly unbelievable. Let's get connected to our fans, brought to you by Northtown Kia. Shop online at northtownkia.com. We got some fun tweets on the Bills drought Mount Rushmore. We'll get to those here in a second, but let's go to the phones. We've got Walter on the line. Walter, how are we doing today?
Hey, guys. How's it going? I just wanted to call in, and I was at the game Sunday, and that run. I mean, I've been last 20 years. I've been to about, you know, easy 100 mm-hmm. games, and what an iconic moment. And in many ways, regardless how the season goes, I mean, this year will be remembered for that. Josh Allen might be remembered for that, regardless of whether we win a Super Bowl. But I think we've turned the corner, because you know what, 3-4 years ago, McDermott would have never have gone for that play. He would have gone with a field goal. So that may bode well. Love your show, guys. All the best, and looking forward to the stretch drive.
Thanks for the call, Walter. I can't totally agree on the McDermott thing. We had a call yesterday on Show Me the Bulldog that mentioned in the 13 seconds game, the Bills' first drive, McDermott went for it twice on fourth down as they scored. He is a guy that goes for it on fourth down. If you haven't heard it, go back and listen to his appearance with Show Me the Bulldog earlier this week. I mean, he broke down what they do for fourth down calls, how they get to ultimately their destination, if they're going to go for it or not. It's
such a great breakdown.
I loved it. It's like a 2.5-minute answer. Mm-hmm. He breaks down, like, in the week leading up to the game and then in the game. It's so good. Josh Allen's absolutely going to be remembered for that play. I mean, if he wins the MVP, that will be the play that is shown. I think Mike Greenberg on ESPN nailed that this week, that's going to be the play that is shown in a few months when he wins the MVP. I hope, though, the game outside of the people that went there isn't like this super memorable one. Honestly,
I hope that's not the only thing he's remembered for, or like that's his big play. I want to be like thinking him throwing a touchdown in the Super Bowl.
The only reason it will be memorable is if the Bills go on to beat the Chiefs in the playoffs. Like, if you think back and look
it'll
back,
be like it started there.
Right, you look back at the season, oh, they had their number in the regular season, then they finally did it in the playoffs. I mean, even if they don't win the Super Bowl, if they just beat the Chiefs in the playoffs, that will make this past game memorable.
It's going to be remembered. I mean, because it was a very good game. I just hope that that's not like... I hope it's not the pinnacle of the season, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's my biggest issue. I don't want that to be the pinnacle of the season.
But it also depends how the season ends. If the season ends with a playoff loss, this past game might be the pinnacle of the season, just because of the fact that, hey, you can hang your hat on another Bills win in the regular season over the Chiefs, but you didn't have anything to show for it in the playoffs again, regardless of who you lose to.
Yep.
And again, if they win over the Chiefs and make it to the Super Bowl, or just win over the Chiefs and go to the AFC Championship game, this game will be remembered because it started back there, and you had their number in the regular season, and you made it work in the postseason for once.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only way it gets really remembered.
Yep. On to, though, our little fun conversation today. Bills drought Mount Rushmore.
This is
Bills
fantastic.
Are on the bye week. It's the 14th year anniversary of Stevie Johnson. And you heard the call there. Stevie Johnson, why so serious play? He's one of my favorite Bills of all time.
He's on my Mount Rushmore. Mine is...
He's not on my Mount Rushmore. He is my favorite Bill of all time.
Mm-hmm.
He is, or kind of that era, I guess, but he's not on the Mount Rushmore.
Mine is Kyle Williams, Eric Woods, Stevie Johnson, and Fred Jackson. I wanted to give it to Fitz, but just like we talked about, the fact that he bounced around so much, it's tough to look at it that way.
Yep.
My favorite response so far, though, is just a lot of people are throwing in the same names and everything like that, but when you guys flesh it out and make it into more of like what it would actually look like, it's great. So Sean tweets in, Kyle Williams, Eric Woods, Stevie Johnson, and Fred Jackson. Monuments of Mormon Moulds and Antoine Winfield around the grounds. Like that's so good. Like I'm picturing like in the middle of downtown Buffalo, there's this giant monument to Williams, Wood, Stevie, and Fred Jackson. And then also in the same park, there's little tiny plaques for like Eric Moulds, Brian Mormon, and Anton Winfield, and then probably some other people as well. Like it's just, I don't know, it's just making me laugh. It's funny. But there's a lot of great responses in here. Some off the wall ones too. I mean a lot of fits.
Eric Moulds
is kind of coming in there too, which is nice. That was my first Bills jersey, an Eric Moulds jersey.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
London Fletcher.
Yep.
That's a good one. Saw that pop up. Lee Evans.
I mean, the Lee Evans, J.P. Lossman deep ball to Lee Evans, one of the prettier sights in football.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for a bad quarterback, that man could throw a beautiful deep ball.
Right. Nate Clements.
Yeah.
Jairus Byrd.
Is Lee Evans forgotten because, like, Stevie Johnson was more like of a well-known, and I feel like...
He was more of a personality.
Yeah.
Lee Evans wasn't as much of a personality, but...
It helped, though, that I think Stevie was just the overall better receiver.
Yeah, but there were times, though, where Lee Evans was right there with him in terms of the greatness and everything. But, if that team had a quarterback.
Oh, they had two of the best receivers, arguably in football.
Yeah, it just
because you had the deep threat in Lee Evans. He was a burner.
Are there any teams like that right now where you have these two great receivers and you're just subpar quarterback play? I mean, before Amari Cooper got traded, you could maybe say it about the Browns.
Him, Cedric Tillman's really come on.
Yeah, Jerry Jeudy as well. Jerry Jeudy, if he could have figured something out.
The Broncos for years.
Broncos, yeah.
Because it was Cortland Sutton, it was Jerry Jeudy, it was a few guys.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think.
Because there's not really a team that's set up like that right now, I don't think.
Carolina was for a little while because you kind of knew DJ Moore was a guy.
Yep.
But it was sort of just him. Robbie Anderson's fine, but not anything special.
Is it Robbie now, or is it Chosen, or which one's he on?
Not sure. He was going by Robbie Anderson at the time, though. Him and DJ were together.
Right, back there, yeah. Okay.
Not sure. Yeah, I don't know really. Like,
I'm just trying to think, because that Bills team was so historic, or the Bills era was so historic in the worst way possible, but it's also... I wonder if we're kind of actually seeing it again with the Jets, because the Jets are approaching 17 years.
Love them.
They are so much. Rapidly approaching 17 years. That's, you know what? No, that's actually probably a good team to pick, because they have Garrett Wilson and they had Mike Williams and now they have Davante Adams and they have a subpar quarterback.
Yeah. I also love the Aaron Schobel shouts.
Yeah. It's great. Also,
you think of Bills drought pass rushers. Mario always comes up first.
Mm-hmm.
Schobel, though, was also a guy averaging, having 12.5, 14.5, 13.5 sack seasons where you're just like, okay.
Yeah. Terrence McGee should be getting more love.
Terrence McGee, yeah. I already got someone tweeting at me that I've snubbed him.
You know one that I haven't seen at all? Willis McGahee.
No, I mean, a very exciting draft pick coming out of Miami. Yeah. He has the terrible knee injury, but there was the feeling of like, oh, Willis McGahee's going to play for the Buffalo Bills. Like, that's really cool. He also gets lost in the shuffle of a lot of drought Bills running backs.
Yeah.
He also snubbed the city. Yeah. And on his way out, that's why I feel like not a lot of people.
That's true. He wasn't. Because that's the thing is like a lot of these players, some of them are just very good, but most of them are fan favorites. Because that's that era of the Bills is when you just kind of fall in love with players because they give you great moments. Because you're not going to have a great season, but you have a great moment every once in a while. Like, why are you so serious with Stevie Johnson?
Yep.
And it's just fun to look back on this. It's a great bye-week discussion, too, just to remember some drought Bills.
Truly terrible football teams with some bright spots in there.
Yeah,
that's, I mean, it's I mean, you look back at this era, and it's why I've enjoyed obviously this one so much.
And thank God we have Josh Allen.
Yeah, yes. But I mean, even like the players around him. We were talking with Sal yesterday about this too. Of like, you look around at some of these players they developed. Like a guy like Christian Benford would have been a stud on these Bills drought teams that like we would constantly talk about. Look at Jarius Byrd. I mean, I think he had, what, 6 interceptions in one season. The same with guys like Aaron Williams. Also another Texas guy, Hookem. But now, like, they're just you know, considered good players on these Bills teams. Like, we don't run around and scream about them. Sometimes we do. Some of us do. But they're kind of just, yeah, they're a good team. And it does sometimes become just all about Josh Allen.
Jarius Byrd in 2009 had 9 interceptions.
Oh, my God.
9 in one season.
I think it was maybe, like, he had 6 straight.
Oh, okay.
I think it was in 6
2012,
straight
2012, he had 5. 2013, he had 4.
He was good.
He only – oh, nope, never mind. I was going to say, he only had interceptions on the Bills, but he had 2 in New Orleans – or 3 in New Orleans, and that's it.
Okay.
He had 25 interceptions in his career, and 22 of them were on the Bills.
Mm-hmm.
But he also played 4 other – like, he only played 5 years on the Bills, and he had 22 interceptions. That feels like a typo.
It does.
It's crazy.
I'm going through Aaron Schobel now here, man. We got to talk about him more. Just like how good he is. 78 sacks. I mean, through a 17-game average. He played in the 16-game era. But through a 17-game average, he's averaging 10. He's second all-time for the Bills in sacks, only behind, obviously, Bruce Smith, who leads the NFL all-time in sacks. Second-team All-Pro. He's really good. His problem, though, is like, it's like this like 3-year run here where it's like, oh, he's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
But he was really good most of his career. Just amazing for a short bit in terms of sack numbers, but really good his entire career. Tackles for loss, he's like in the double digits basically every year. His last year, by the way, is just impressive. Solo tackles, 34. Tackles for loss, 17. QB hits, 17. 10 sacks. And that's his last year at Buffalo. He also only played in 5 games in 2008, his second last year. So, I mean, his stats should probably be even higher. Yeah, he's great.
This is a funny tweet from Steve. The drought lasted so long, it's hard to pick 4 players. That's very true.
So good.
Because there's a lot of guys you could pick for this. Also, another tweet from Joe. He added in there LeSean McCoy. I don't know how I feel about that. Because McCoy was only here for 4 years, and two of them were technically playoff years. 2018 was not a playoff year. What am I saying?
Yeah, just 2017.
But still, 1 year, but one of his 4 years was a playoff year.
Yeah, and then,
I can't.
I think also their running backs I have more fond memories of.
Yeah.
I love McCoy because he was great for Josh Allen's early career, them having him there already. And he was sort of, for a little while there, kind of the only offense the Bills could muster with Tyrod.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But
I think one of my lasting memories from like when I was younger was just kind of the hype around C.J. Spiller, but then just...
Oh, yeah.
It just kind of like, not trailed off, but it just never really amounted to what it was hyped up.
Because it was the 1 year where he's averaging like 6 yards a carry. I want to get that year up here real quick. But it was that, and then you have the, you know, him and Fred Jackson are taking turns.
Yeah, it was 2012.
Mm-hmm.
He had 1,200 yards, 6 yards per carry, 6 touchdowns.
Mm-hmm. And then even receiving 459 yards.
Mm-hmm.
But then the next year, similar amount of carries, similar games.
Only 4.6 yards per carry.
Yeah, it drops down immediately and then never picks up again.
Nope.
And to be fair, too, that was his 3rd year, so it was that you were waiting constantly. This guy out of Clemson, how good's he going to be? It's also, you know, of course they took another running back when they took Spiller.
Yeah.
It just never materialized past that season. Because then that 2013 is the second highest total, just over 900, and then it drifts away, and then he kind of lingers around the NFL for a few years, ultimately retiring, or at least his last year in the NFL is 2017 with Kansas City.
This is yet another fond memory look back of look how far we've come.
Yeah,
right. Like this is just like this is fun and all, but it's just great to be like, you know what? This is great.
Eventually, we'll do this with the Sabres.
One can hope.
Yep. 803-0550, the number to call. Coming up at 12 o'clock, Paul Hamilton and Brayton Wilson will have you covered for Sabres Live today. There's no Sabres Live or One Bills Live. And then from 1 to 3, myself and Derek Kramer will have you the rest of the mid-morning into the afternoon. Shelton Bulldog then from 3 to 7. Zach Jones and Josh Schmidt here on the Northtown Automotive X Point Show. This is WGR. Welcome back, everyone. Zach Jones and Josh May. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive X Point Show, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. Before we get out of here, let's go back to the phones. We've got Mike here on the line. Mike, how are we doing today?
Hey, how you doing? Good afternoon.
Good afternoon yourself. Good morning. Doing well.
Hey, yeah, I wanted to talk about, you know, every NFL season that I've ever been a part of, I think I've never seen one that's so stacked as far as the playoffs. I think these playoffs is going to be stacked, and the one seed has never been more important than this year as far as the playoff teams is concerned. Secondly, as far as how the Bills fared without their two top receivers and being able to beat Kansas City and going forward, how they put the league on notice, I believe. You know, I think Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean is just geniuses when it comes to just making the right moves and the right decisions. It always turns out right for the Bills. But I just wanted to see what you thought about the playoffs and the seeding as far as the competition this year.
Yeah, Mike, thanks for the call. I think Bean and McDermott have put together a really good team, and even missing a little bit on the wide receiver kind of run there, they answered it quickly. And they got it done, 3 weeks before the trade deadline. So the Cooper addition was great. I will say, I don't actually think the AFC playoffs are stacked. I think just everyone is closer to the bottom. There isn't really any true elite teams that are running away with it that you just think are a wagon. Even Baltimore, who's scoring a ton on offense, can't stop a nosebleed on defense. Buffalo has dealt with injuries throughout the year, and they're, you know, up until Kansas City, they're two wins against two of their three games against above 500 opponents. They lost both, Baltimore and Houston. Kansas City can't really do anything on offense unless it's third down of the red zone. There doesn't seem to be this like clear top of the mountain when it comes to the AFC playoffs this year. And though, to your point, though, I think that's maybe where the one seed does matter, because there could be some chaos in the AFC playoffs this year, whether it be like a Houston team going to Arrowhead and just beating them, because Kansas City's not as good as they have been in previous years. Baltimore, same thing, going from they look like the cream of the crop to they might be a wild card team, and Pittsburgh might truly pass their well on their way now to win the AFC North. I think it's going to be a really fun playoff this year, because everyone, it feels, is much closer. There doesn't feel like there's that bad team. There also doesn't feel like there's that great team, which we've had for years.
That's like you said, that's the most fun part about it, and it's good that that's the case, because the NFC is the exact opposite. It's the Lions and everyone else. Like, it's not even the 49ers anymore. It's just the Lions. You know, like, yeah. At least the AFC can save us by saying, hey, here's some of these great teams that will give you great games. Everyone else is bad. Good luck.
Good luck. That's going to do it for us today. Coming up next, Paul Hamilton and Brayton Wilson covering Sabres Live today from 12 to 1. And then I'll be back on with Derek Kramer from 1 to 3. You're listening to WGR.